Good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writers Series, Friday, January 24th, 2003. I'm speaking with Bonnie Jo Campbell, an MFA graduate of Western Michigan University, who just recently published her first novel and has won several awards, including a Pushcart Prize for her short fiction. Welcome to MSU, Bonnie.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Your bio states in part that you grew up on a small Michigan farm where you learned to castrate pigs, milk cows, and make chocolate candy, and that you didn't begin writing until after you earned a master's degree in mathematics. How did you switch from math to writing?
Well, I always actually had wanted to write, and okay. I always worked on writing, and since I was a kid, I had that writing disease. I think of the desire to write as kind of a mental illness, kind of like an obsessive compulsive disorder, and I've always wanted to write, but I kind of saw everybody else wanted to write too, so yeah. I thought I wanted to show that I was smart, so I thought, oh, well, I'll go get a degree in mathematics. So, but I really like math. I think math is really fun, and it's really nice that when you do a math problem, you really know exactly what you've done. When you get a math problem correct, you know that you've got something there.
That's
with
true.
A story, it's a little more difficult to know when you've got something good. But well, I was lucky that after I got my master's degree in mathematics, that my mathematics advisor, Dr. Art White, encouraged me to take a writing class.
Really?
And that's how I took my first writing class and how I got really going.
Wow. I mean, there's such a dichotomy between math and writing and being logical versus being creative that it's amazing for someone to make that kind of transition. Most of the stories in your Associated Writing Program's award-winning collection, Women and Other Animals, are told from the point of view of women ranging in age from 12 to 60-ish, 60-something. Why did you include two stories from a man's point of view?
Well, I like the fellas. I'm interested in how they think as well. It's funny that you know, very few people even notice that I have stories from a man's point of view in the collection. And I guess I'm just interested in all people. And so to me, it didn't seem odd at all to put some fellas in there as protagonists.
Okay.
But if you notice, in both those stories, the men are obsessed with very strong women.
Yes.
Even if they're not strong women themselves,
sure.
they're obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did notice that. Now, I do have to admit to cheating a little. I mean, I did read your complete short story collection, but I have the paperback edition with the reading group guide in the back. So those questions gave me some ideas about what I wanted to ask you. Instead of having a bunch of people sitting around discussing your work, I thought, I can ask the author herself.
And then you can find out the truth.
Exactly. Now, reading Taking Care of the O'Learys reminded me, but I'll admit only for a few pages, of The Yellow Wallpaper. In a way, and that I worried that Barb O'Leary, the protagonist, might really go mad, like the woman in Charlotte Perkins Gilman's classic. That made me wonder who are your favorite writers, short fiction or otherwise.
I guess I love Flannery O'Connor and Carson McCullers.
Mm-hmm. Both regional writers, but have transcended that.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, regional writer. I think it means you're not from New York. Or that you've refused to move to New York.
Yeah.
But it's funny, they are, you know, I guess they're both Southern writers, and Southern writers are known for their eccentric characters and their attention to a certain kind of kooky detail, and I guess I would like to think that my writing has some of those qualities.
That you're presenting the eccentric characters of the Upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would agree. Now, you would say that those two are influences of yours then?
You know, it's hard to say. This question of influences is always a tough one because I think often we mention the people who we'd like to think influenced us, but I think so much of what makes us the writers that we are our mothers and our brothers and sisters, the people we grew up with who were telling stories at the time. I think we can learn, we can identify with a lot of writers later that we learn about later in life, and we can try to steal their tricks.
Good.
And we can admire them, but it's hard to say. I think probably my mother and my grandfather, who are both storytellers, they're Irish and they like to drink and tell stories. And oddly enough, I think they're actually the biggest influences.
Really?
Even though they aren't famous.
Yeah. Yeah, but just because they love to spin those yarns, so to speak. Good.
And they never agreed with each other. Their stories were always very different.
Contradictory.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Well, that would really show up, I think that show up in your writing, and particularly in Q Road, because all the characters are involved with telling, you know, spinning stories from their points of view. And we get to learn so many things about so many different people. And I found that really fascinating and wondered if that was confusing for you when you were switching gears, so to speak, from one story to another. You know, was that
Yeah,
difficult?
There's the point, almost everybody gets their their point of view appears, the point of view of about 12 people, well, maybe 8 people appear in the book, plus a few animals get points
true.
Of view.
And, like gray cat.
And I think that, I guess after writing, after studying writing in the writing program at Western and writing women and other animals, and where I was so focused on really keeping one point of view and really focusing on how that person sees the world, it was really fun to just stretch out and say, okay, what was Steinbeck doing when he wrote, you know, those omniscient, those stories with omniscient narrators where they were just all, the point of view is just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And Steinbeck had a few animals, too, that he used their point of view. So
in a way, it was an experimentation for you.
Yeah, it was really just kind of a freeing up. And I think sometimes in stories that have a lot of points of view, you can tell a bigger story. You can tell the story of a community rather than just the story of a character or a few characters.
Now, is Q Road your first attempt at a novel?
You know, I was saying yes to those kind of questions, but then I remembered that when I was in college, I wrote a novel.
Oh, really?
And but it wasn't very good.
Okay.
I didn't know much about writing a novel. And it was about my experiences in the circus. I had traveled with the circus for 4 or 5 months and selling snow cones.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I lived on the circus train and hung out with people who smoked a lot and had really gravelly voices. And I'm getting kind of gravelly voiced now. But I wrote about those experiences in a novel, and I didn't really have much of a sense of how, you know, the shape of a novel at that time, but I knew it was important to get those details down. And now I think I will probably go back. I haven't looked at the thing for 15 years, but I think I probably will go back and take a look at it at some point and see if I want to write a story that has a circus in it.
Yeah, well, your story about Big Joni came out of that, I would think. Okay. Well, I felt that several chapters of Q Road could almost stand on their own as short stories. So did putting them together pose any difficulties for you?
Well, it was hard to write in that book, you know? I think every book is hard to write for, I mean, maybe there are a few people for whom that's not true, but I suspect with me, every book's going to be hard to write. But the real challenges were in keeping all those, keeping all the points of view straight and making it absolutely clear to the reader at any given moment whose point of view the story is told from. Because I think it's no fun in a story. It's no fun to be confused as a reader. I really do want to be clear. And the story also jumps around in time a lot.
Yes.
Even though the now of the story takes place in one day, from 7 in the morning until midnight or something.
Yeah.
The story did go constantly flashes back in time to people of 150 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it was. I knew it was going to be hard to keep clear where that's happening. And I think that was the reason that I decided to keep the story all in one day, because at least that part of the story is nicely contained, whereas a lot of aspects of the story ramble.
Yeah, well, I liked how you kept emphasizing October 9th, 1999, which was the day the action all took place in the present, but, you know, I kept thinking, what's going to happen? I had to keep reading. But I loved how in the end the story is very cyclical, that 140, 150 years ago, people were drawn together in a community, you know, that they had real strong ties and affections for one another. They'd help their neighbors out and so forth. And then you explore how they grew away from that. But then in the end, they kind of return to it, or at least have a desire again to maybe build a little more closely knit community. Because Q Road is ultimately about love, and love between people, certainly romantic love and, you know, friendly love. But it's also about love of place and land. And in the end, you know, as I was saying, the community of sorts is reborn, and that Steve and Milton and Tom decide they're going to help George Harlan with his land because he doesn't have anyone else to help him. But one person, April May, who had lived through the tornado, who had, you know, had been rooted for so long to this one small place where she'd spent her entire life, is liberated by the fire, by the burning of the barn. You know, why is it that she's the one person who suddenly wants to flee when everyone else comes together because of that fire?
And it is odd because she was the character who was more, all along had a sense of community.
Yes.
I mean, she never lost her sense of community.
So and there's yet, irony there.
Yeah, and yet somehow, you know, it's funny how these characters, change, you know, mm-hmm. and how they develop as you write them. But I did see her as a person who, because she had stayed in the community all these years and had been an integral part of it, that mm-hmm. suddenly now, and maybe now that the other people were going to take over keeping the community together, now she in some way could go out and roam.
Okay.
You know, and that's why she fantasizes that her house burns down and she can buy an RV.
I really love that, especially after having seen about Schmidt recently.
Well, she also is an interesting, I based her on some of the really practical farm women who I've known over the years.
Sure.
There really is a variety of very practical female character who really does hold things together while, you know, in the face of disaster mm-hmm. and in the face of community dissolution. And
okay.
so she's really, I really like her as a character very much.
Well, I hope that she was able to get out west in her RV eventually. Now, have you ever considered expanding or tried to expand one of your short stories, perhaps one from Women and Other Animals, into a novel?
I know, that's something I think about, but I don't know, because I really see the stories as finished.
Okay.
I really do see them as their whole things. It's hard to see mm-hmm. them it's hard to see them becoming novels. I do have an idea about my story, The Fishing Dog, I have an idea that possibly that could be a section of some. I'm interested in writing a novel of education, I guess.
Okay.
What do I say? Bildungsroman. I get in trouble with my teachers when I say that. But a novel of education that is about a young woman. And the young woman, actually, I'm very interested in is probably the mother of Rachel in Kew Road.
Oh,
I'm interested in her doing a story about her growing up in very rugged circumstances.
Yeah.
And I thought possibly that was her in The Fishing Dog, the girl who mm-hmm. lives on her own in a shack and
yeah, I can see that connection.
Deals with men as they come.
Yeah, but except she, the girl in The Fishing Dog, falls for another man. Well, maybe he's just a temporary blip on her radar, I suppose. But yeah, that she could age into Margot then. Okay, that would be interesting. Well, I just want to state on the record that my personal favorite would be Bringing Home the Bones.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, exploring Charlotte's childhood and the mystery surrounding her parents' lives and deaths, because that was all shrouded for her. And it's not something she really wanted to know about. I guess maybe you could explore why her psyche was so damaged or whatever. But certainly I want to know about the roots of the estrangement between her and her adult daughters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's a very interesting character. She too is inspired by sort of these practical farm women.
Yes.
However, she's very abrasive. Mm-hmm. She's a character that you wouldn't necessarily want to sit down to dinner with.
True.
As her daughters don't necessarily want to sit down to dinner with her. But I just love the idea of this woman who just keeps yelling at her daughters because they don't eat enough meat.
Or fat,
right. They won't put cream in their coffee.
Yeah. And I guess I'm always fascinated by stories in which mothers and daughters are so incredibly different, because I think at the end of the day, my friends and I are all very much like our mothers, even if we don't want to admit it. Do you think you're a lot like your mom then, or a lot different?
I probably am a lot like my mom.
Okay.
But different as well.
Yeah.
She is very rugged. I mean, my mother will catch a squirrel and gut it out and cook it.
Whoa.
And I'm not so inclined, you know, I'm a little bit wimpy about both shooting it and gutting, well, all yeah. three, shooting it, gutting it, and cooking it. I'm a little leery about it. But I'd like to think that I learned from her survival skills
Good.
That I could use if I need them.
I do have to admit that I'd be very curious to see someone skin a skunk without busting the sack open. So
well, I have to say, I was one time when I was very young, I visited a friend, I think her mother's name was Lee Parker. I think that just came back to me. Mm-hmm. And I was a kid and was visiting my kid friend, and maybe we were 8 years old, and I came in the kitchen, and her mother was gutting out a skunk on the kitchen table. And I guess, you know, when I started writing this book, and that scene came right away, and yeah. I realized that had never left me.
Wow.
I just couldn't believe that she was doing that on the kitchen, and she was brave.
Oh.
She had a lot of confidence.
I would think so. And, you know, when Margot split the sack or punctured the sack on purpose, then, at least I think it was on purpose,
yeah.
I could smell it. Yeah, that's
oh.
how descriptive it was. I could smell it.
Oh. And that smell doesn't go away quickly.
No. Well, this being the Michigan Writer Series, we always ask our guests what impact living in Michigan has on their work. Well, in your case, it's quite obvious. All of your stories are set in the state, and particularly the Kalamazoo region. So my question for you is, after your experiences working for the circus and traveling through Europe, what brought you back to Michigan?
Yeah, it's funny that I didn't know that I was going to come back to Michigan.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I went to school in Chicago,
right.
And then I moved to Boston for a few years, and
okay.
I lived in L.A., and I lived in Milwaukee, and somehow I just found myself thinking more and more that I wanted to come back. And oddly enough, I married this guy from Boston, and
oh, okay.
oddly enough, he was willing to come back here
oh,
with
wow.
me, too. So
that's good.
So, yeah, I think that I tried to write when I lived in other places. You know, as I said, I've tried to write probably since I was, you know, 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always worked at it, but it's never really clicked. I've never really, when I was younger, I just didn't have the sense of, yes, this is a story. This is what I want to write. I had written a lot of essays, but never a piece of fiction that really held together
mm-hmm.
until I moved back.
Oh.
And, you know, as soon as I was here, and things just made sense once I got back here, and I was able to write, and I had a sense of what a story was. And
yeah.
I don't know, maybe it has to do with just the years and time and knowing people and coming back to people and
okay.
having been away.
Well, having had that experience now and having found success with your writing, can you imagine yourself living anywhere else but still writing perhaps about home with the same passion and humor? And detail?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't right now.
Okay.
I can't imagine living anywhere else right now, but I think part of that is because I'm just so entrenched in this writing life that if I move anywhere, I'll have to spend money.
Oh, okay.
And all of the thing about being a writer is you have to learn to live really cheaply
yeah.
and not spend any money. And so, you know, I'm, you know, my husband and I are quite comfortable in a small house that's cheap to heat, and it's paid
oh,
for,
good.
And life is pretty good. Plenty of money for coffee, you know. And but I could imagine living in other places to have the experience of living there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I would always feel that Michigan was home. But I could imagine being somewhere else. I mean, for instance,
okay.
taking a, you know, the common thing writers do is take a visiting writer position
yes.
in another place for 9 months or something.
Okay.
I could see doing that.
Well, I hope something like that comes your way then, so you can get the experience. Now, lastly, what projects are you currently working on?
Well, I'm working on a novel about mathematics.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to bring that math and writing together, finally. I want to write, my mom wants me to write a funny novel. She
okay.
her only complaint about my work is, it's so serious. And so I really do, and I really enjoy reading funny novels. I love Wodehouse. I love P.G. Wodehouse.
Yeah.
You know, these frivolous novels that are just about love and, you know, animals and people and disasters and rich people not being smart. And and even contemporary comic writer like Carl Hiaasen.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to write something funny. And I think the only way to treat mathematics is with humor for the general public. And good. So I want to write a story. I have a novel that I have a very rough draft of a novel that's about a gal who's just about to get her PhD in mathematics and finds herself at odds with every aspect of her life. And
wow.
In a fun way.
Well, okay. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I find that fun, but I hope if I was in those shoes, but I hope you do and have success with that. And good luck.
Oh, thank
so,
you.
Thank you very much, Bonnie, for participating in the MSU Libraries Michigan Writers Series. And good luck with your reading tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Good.